Third of our mediation series of webinars. As most of you will know, I'm Adrienne Hardy. I'm a partner at MPM Legal, and we are a boutique employment and business immigration firm supporting businesses with all kinds of employee related issues from start to finish and beyond. Today's session, as always, is being recorded. So if you can't stay for the whole session, don't worry, you can pick it up from our website and hear the audio on our Spotify channel when you're walking the dog or whatever you want to do, where you can access all our other episodes as well. And as always, we're really happy to answer questions. So if you use the Q&A function in the bottom rather than the chat, that would be terrific. And we will get to as many of the questions as we can in the time. We won't be turning cameras on. We won't be asking you to speak. So feel free to type away, sit back and listen to what we have to say about mediation. Excitingly, for me anyway, although perhaps I must get out more, we've got a few polls that I will post up as the session goes on. I say that keeping my fingers crossed, hoping that I've got the technological know-how to do it. So look out for those links. I'd be very interested in your views. Right. OK, so today I'm joined by Michael Farrier, who, as you will know from our previous series, is our wonderful accredited mediator. And I'm going to hand over to you, Mike, because frankly, you're the expert and I am interested in learning as much about mediation as everybody else on the webinar today. So good morning.
Good morning. Thanks. And good morning, everyone. Yes, this is our third webinar in the series of we're doing five as part of a mini series on mediation to give it a bit of a focus. And then we're going to have a break probably until springtime when we'll pick it up again. But today we're looking at mediation at work, I've called this. And that is looking at both its magic, what it can do when it's allowed its chance, but also how it can be embedded into your workplaces and become part of the culture. Because I do believe that the law over the last 30 odd years has become so complicated and so complex, demanding so much from employers and their systems, that actually when it comes down to it, employment law regulation is all about getting people to talk through their issues and not be focused on processes. Instead, focus on the conversation, focus on the issue, find a way of cutting through all the procedural regulation and expectation and move above that risk line by having your own systems that reflect your culture, but which encourage and empower, but also expect your employees to deal with their conflicts respectfully, professionally, in a mediatory sort of way, with a mediator informally or formally present if necessary, but just using the message of mediation to make the employee relations piece far more sort of progressive, I guess.
Yeah,
so today,
sense.
This is looking at how it can work and how you will, in HR most typically, refer cases to mediation when those opportunities arise. So hopefully you'll find something useful in here to build on the earlier two sessions.
So, well, okay, let's start from the beginning then, talking about that. So what typical cases would you be looking at? What would be suitable for mediation? And I suppose the flip side of that is which cases aren't suitable?
I would say this, start from the premise that every conflict can be mediated. That's if that's your starting point in your mind, you'll be open to the idea and the suggestion and promise of mediation. So cases that fall definitely the right side of the line will be instances of employees just falling out of touch or falling out of relationship with each other in the workplace. That sometimes happens through the pressure of work, the immediacy of work. Those who are looking to raise a grievance, could mediation help before you go down that formal path? Disciplinary matters, clearly the business will need to intervene formally in certain scenarios without question, where mediation as an alternative would not be appropriate. So misconduct cases, gross misconduct cases, discrimination cases, whistleblowing cases, any situation where the business feels its values are being challenged by behaviours requiring a formal response, then you need to adhere to your formal processes first and foremost. But once you've been through those processes, ask yourself, well, what's left? Where are we now? Are there relationships that have been damaged through those formal processes? And if there are, and if they are set to continue, not all of them continue, but if they are, if there is hope that those relationships can be rebuilt, then I would recommend mediation as a starting point, because it's a good way of bringing people directly together.
So how do you do that bit then? How do you do that bit? How and when do you refer cases for mediation?
Typically, where I've worked with businesses setting up pilot schemes in the past, I've asked them to appoint a stakeholder, a mini team, if the business is resourced accordingly. And then when they feel there's a case that's worthy of referral, I said, give me a call and we can talk through in anonymous terms whether it is appropriate. And assuming that they've understood the boundaries of these types of cases and when you can refer, then I say, well, look, can you then go to the parties concerned and suggest they have a conversation with me in the initial instance? And then I can try and answer any of their questions, put them at ease over the process and myself in particular, build trust in the process, and then we can build a separate parallel to take the mediation forward. So if you're in HR, for example, the typical stakeholder, or legal, but most often it's HR, then it needs a champion. It needs a champion to say, right, any conflicts that we're hearing about, let me see them, and then I can decide with our external mediators or internal mediators, if you have a group of them, whether this is appropriate for that. And if so, let's see if the parties are willing, because it has to be a voluntary process.
So presumably in that case, though, you're best off trying to catch things as at an early stage, because, I mean, yeah. I don't know about everybody on the call, but certainly from my experience, by the time it lands on my desk, you can almost see the history of that relationship breaking down. So, absolutely. You know, and it gets to the point, doesn't it, when you tend to go through the formal processes, that the parties become more and more polarized, yeah. and cross, frankly, really cross. And then I can imagine that bringing them together again, you've got quite a divide to cross, haven't you?
Yes, in my experience, Adrian, the longer you take to get a case to mediation, the harder it is and the more sessions in mediation you need to unpick what's gone before, what's built up. The law has created this pressure through expecting businesses to use grievance and disciplinary processes and capability processes, which pitch the individual against the business. And they seldom bring together the people who have the problem. Mm. If you put all that aside and you say, right, before we get to formal process, let's get with a referee, a mediator, let's get these people together and see if they can hammer out a solution themselves. Because that's best. If you can make a solution, build a solution yourself, it will last longer than one that's imposed. And just a final point on this question is this. If you reach your own outcome, you can live with it more easily than if it's imposed. And I say that in the context of both pre-litigation conflicts in the workplace, but also litigation conflicts. You know, parties sometimes commit to a judge handing down their judgment. I'm prepared to accept the judgment of the court. Unfortunately, when the judgment comes, it's never as supportive of your individual position as you expect. And then you're left with a final decision that you can do nothing with if you don't like it on the facts. You can appeal on the law, but better to craft and come up with your own solution to these problems that you have and compromise over them, put it behind you. And the best way to do that is as quickly as the problem, sort of nip it in the bud.
Yeah. Now, can I just bring in a question, actually, because it seems like this would be a good time. A question's been asked. Would a discussion with someone who is appointed to you for mediation be in person, or could it be done from a distance?
It can be done in whatever way the technology allows. I mean, certainly through pandemic, I've done more mediations online, although probably with workplace mediations where you've got more relationship-based conflicts as opposed to legal issue-based conflicts that you get in litigation. I prefer in-person mediation because having people in a room together is the best way for all the senses to be in play and to actually read the room individually.
Yeah, body language and all that type of stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
There's no harm in looking at online mediation. And indeed, there's a growing interest in online mediated processes around the world. There is no reason why it can't be across global boundaries, time zones, to suit the business's management structures either.
Yeah.
So be open-minded again. You know, the priority, to answer the question, is to get someone talking to a mediator as soon as they can. And it matters less so how that's done in the first instance.
Yeah.
You find some hesitation, perhaps on a party's front. You know, they're a bit wary of mediation and what it's about. And is it some magic wand that the business is offering where there's like some sort of catch or conflict of interest? But
or is it going to be one-sided? You know,
My job in those first calls is to put them at ease and say, if you come to me as the mediator, HR will not get to hear any about this unless you tell them together what you want them to hear. So it's a completely sort of protected bubble.
Yeah. And somebody's made a really good point actually on our Q&A, saying, you know, one issue about whether the participants will accept a mediated solution is that with mediation, each participant can have their full say. And that's absolutely right, isn't it? It's not a case of they're going to have directed questions, you know, that those are the only questions that are going to be put to them. So it's a proper airing of the emotions as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Venting is the mediators say. Getting people to really say what's been on their mind and how they've been made to feel by behaviours or situations is the first real stage of recovering the relationship or moving forward. Without that, everything else is just a band-aid. You need to have that special place where the individuals can have that heart-to-heart. And a mediator, his or her role is to ensure, or their role, is to ensure that there's a safe place for them to do that against ground rules and respected rules within the meeting session.
Yeah.
I give them up to 10 minutes uninterrupted speaking time at the outset of each mediation in the joint session when we all get together to give them the chance to say whatever they want to. And having coached them beforehand, well, if you're going to say that, how do you think that's going to be received by the
And
do you think that language, that communication style, is the best way of being heard? So you can actually coach them, but also encourage them to use language that gets them the best chance of being heard. And that may be language they're not used to using. It may be more direct, it may involve emotion, bound to involve emotion initially at the early stages of these discussions. But it does leave them feeling at the end of it, I said what I came to say. And that's very important.
Yeah. One of the questions is probably a question that's going to be asked by a lot of people. So is mediation really the right route if one side is keen versus the other not so much? I mean, have you come across an example where you've had to do a bit of persuasion?
Yes. I think where it's worked best is HR encouraging the parties to have a conversation, no commitment. If HR tells the parties you will go to mediation, there's less buy-in. And I think mediation works best of all, certainly in the workplace, if employees come voluntarily to it and they're happy to come to it. Now, I've got a different view when it comes to litigation. I don't think there's anything wrong with a judge saying to parties in litigation, right, guys, this case goes no further. Go and talk about this and come back and tell me if you settled it. Because if not, and you've had a good go at settling it, let's go to trial. Judges in the US have been doing that and have been empowered to do it 30 years. In good old Britain, we've just about got to the point today where we say, in cases up to £10,000 worth of value, there will be mediation powers for the judges. That isn't enough. But to answer the question specifically, if I hear that one party is a bit reluctant, and I expect them to be reluctant, I nevertheless position my introductory messages, calls, and emails that basically say, look, this is what mediation is. Let's have a conversation once you've had a chance to think about it. I can encourage you to speak to your lawyer if you have one about it, but this is how I do it. And if you are comfortable after a couple of conversations with me to give it a go, let's go forward. But I always make it clear that actually at any stage in the process, either party can withdraw. Without reason, without any retribution, without feeling guilty. If it's not for them, they can have that safety net of saying, I've done enough, I can't carry this on anymore. Let's go and try something else.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to sort of the various relationships with the parties, because obviously there's, as you've mentioned, conflicts, etc. So can you just talk a little bit around the relationship between the business and the mediator?
Yeah, let's use an example to best illustrate this. There's a performance issue. There's a line manager. Maybe his line manager is pressurizing the direct line manager to solve this performance issue. Maybe someone in sales is not hitting their numbers. Then there's the employee in the end of it. You've got there the business needing sales numbers being and targets being hit. You've got HR, a budding conflict, performance issue, capability question or parallel needed, procedure needed. Then you've got the human element of maybe manager and line employee slowly falling out and distrusting each other, particularly on the employee's part, because they're not hitting the numbers. And so that trust, that creativity, that open environment starts to get eroded and corroded in the process. So when you come to mediation, looking at all the parties and the roles involved in any situation, actually, all the outcomes wanted are the same. The business wants success. The success is performance numbers hitting the targets. The manager wants success. They want a great performing employee, excuse me. The employee wants success, to know they're hitting their numbers and getting rewarded accordingly. HR don't want the conflict management. So mediation actually brings all the competing roles together and promises an outcome that can actually tick all those boxes.
Mm.
If you then compare, for example, a performance management scheme that might run between 3 and 6 months in total before you decide whether the employee's made the grade or not, in that process becomes a battle of wills.
Mm.
Line manager is beating up the direct line manager. You haven't sorted this out yet. The numbers aren't improving. The line manager is passing on that grief to the employee.
HR probably.
Yeah.
And why do we have to go through this? Yeah.
And the employee is thinking, I'm going to beat these at their own game. I'm going to show I'm good enough. And so you get this divide opening up where it becomes a sort of survival of the fittest. And no one will actually be hearing what the other's saying around performance improvements, where they've been, training needed. It becomes, we will get to the end of this process and I will be proved right as the manager, and the employee is thinking the same. So there is a conflict of interest potential in the tools we use already. There certainly is with grievances, because the individual who's aggrieved never really gets to deal with the subject matter of their grievance against someone else in the business head on. It's always through the sort of third party of the business.
Yeah.
That's just going through the motions mainly to make sure they've lowered the risk. So if you stand back and you say, well, actually, all the employee issues that we, 90% of the employee issues we see in the workplace, before you go formal, they all are aligned with each other in terms of the outcomes requested. The businesses, the individuals concerned, HR, legal, they all want the same outcome.
Yeah.
And so when you start introducing the formal processes, that those conflicts really become sharpened.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm saying before you go down the formal route, try to head it off with mediation and encourage it, at least lower the temperature, lower the risk again.
Yeah. We've got a couple of comments coming in while you've been talking about that, which I think is probably the appropriate time to bring them in. One comment is, but sometimes what one or possibly both parties want is to be able to exercise power over the other. And that was exactly what you were saying about the performance management. And the comments, there's got to be genuine goodwill in order to succeed. I think that's probably right. But I think there's also the point that actually through the mediation process, this is where the coaching element part of it comes in, where presumably you would be in a position to be able to guide somebody, as you pointed out just now, about, well, is that the right way to approach it? What response do you think you might be getting? I think that's that, you know, you've got that potential through the mediation to not exactly say to somebody that, look, this is not a power struggle. This is about looking at the end goal of the business. So can you please bear that in mind rather than your own individual position? And I guess mediation gives you a really good platform to be able to get that message across.
Yes. I mean, to pick up on the first point, in my mediations, when parties come along, they come as equals. They just happen
in your mind, but maybe not in theirs.
Well, that's where I start. I encourage them to see, guys, you come along to this session, you come as equals, you just happen to work for the same organization. And if you like, this isn't happening in the workplace, this is a problem you have between yourselves. So depersonalize this. I try so much to avoid mediations happening in the workplace in person for that reason. So it gives, if you like, a neutral ground for them to come to mediation and have a discussion.
Where it's
needed, I do reflect with a party, particularly, so if a manager and an line employee come along, I will encourage, for example, the employee to speak first in the joint session, to try and rebalance that power imbalance.
Right.
I will encourage the manager in the pre-joint session meetings I have with them, and they can be as many as are needed, to say, right, you need to take off your management hat here. This is someone who has an issue with not knowing how to perform in the role you want them to do.
So this is
more about you than the employee, because you hired this person mostly. If this ends badly, it's going to reflect on you more than the employee, because you'll still be there and they may be gone. When you have that sort of dawning reality visiting the manager, they can actually say, okay, I will put myself in their shoes and think, well, what does success look like in the role? Let me help explain what I need from you or where I think you're going wrong, and let's build some objectives together. And it may take a couple of sessions, depending on how deep the rift has been or the conflict has
I think that's brilliant, actually, because I think that answers the next question that someone's raised. The question is, but if in the example of a salesperson, say, they are continuously not hitting the numbers, how will mediation help them achieve the sales targets despite revised targets, view of the market, targets not met, how will it help? And I think in a way what you've talked about is repairing the relationship in order to get to the point where you can set objectives and there's more of that sort of collaboration around getting the performance to where it should be. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think it's in this situation, it's a good question, actually. Mediation can't wave its magic to create the perfect performance standards by the employee.
No.
But what it can do is clear the decks of any lost motivation or broken trust. And with coaching, and perhaps it's better to describe that sort of situation as more of a coaching session, where I'm the independent trying to help the parties find their common ground on what's the best chance they each have for hitting the numbers. So you're taking time out, if you like, and normally those sessions will reveal why an employee, for example, is not closing deals.
Yeah.
And you don't often have the chance to have those in-depth conversations in the workplace because their time is so precious and the numbers need hitting now, right?
And also there's that direct conflict, isn't there? So, you know, it's different with the third party coming in and asking those questions. Whereas, you know, if the manager says that to the employee feels under attack. So it's a wholly different relationship.
I think about this the other day. Most of my workplace mediations that I've undertaken have all been mostly been performance related issues. And when I first started doing performance related conflicts in mediation, I was surprised at how mediation did rebalance the conversation. And they were able to find their own compromise, set their own objectives, and go back to the business, to HR and to any sort of more senior line management, say, look, we've got a plan here. We've had this open conversation. We're going to give it our best for 3 months or 6 months, whatever the period is. And if at the end of it, those objectives are not hit, then we'll have a different conversation.
Yeah.
Or even, despite the best efforts, the parties have come to recognize, look, this isn't working, I'm in the wrong role. Let's talk to HR if I can get a transfer, or let's talk to HR about exit if you'll support me exiting, because it's clear that
this is not going to succeed. Yeah.
But having that sort of open conversation allows for any compromise area which they're happy with. And of course, if the parties themselves at the coal face are happy, then it ticks the businesses box as well, because if the business is hearing this isn't going to work, let's save our time on running through a formal process, but instead let's do a mutual separation now on terms, then you avoid all the time and money and the investment in trying to get someone to standard through a process that threatens employment if they fail to meet the get over the hurdles.
We're almost out of time, but I just want to talk through the results of the poll that I put in, which was a question is whether or not people are using mediation in their businesses. And we got 61% people saying currently use mediation. Hopefully these sessions will help you to give it some consideration. 11% said yes for commercial matters, which I think that's probably driven partly by sort of litigation process and ADR being around for a lot longer. And then 28% said yes, they use it for both employee and commercial matters. So it would be good to get that 28% up to see if that would help. But just as a final question, I mean, this is something that I've been asked before when it comes to mediation. Now, you know, what about confidentiality? What if the employee or the manager, for that matter, is telling you things that, you know, they don't necessarily want to be shared with the other party? How does confidentiality within mediation work?
Okay, good question. And it is the core foundation stone of these discussions, this process. As a lawyer, firstly, I'm bound to respect confidentiality. And if I don't, I can be struck off, basically. So if you use a lawyer to do mediation, my approach to the question of what information I can share is this. I say to all parties, including the business, HR, and the individuals who come along, whatever you tell me, I will regard as confidential that I'm not to share, unless you authorize me to share it with the other party. Some mediators say, anything you tell me, I will use to your advantage. So you must stop me if you don't want me to share information with the other room or the other party. I think that is
wrong way around.
You know, it's fraught with issues. So with me and my approach, it's everything's confidential unless you want me to share it. And I will then, if I think something is worthy of being shared, particularly in terms of timing, I might say, without revealing any confidences in one room, I might say, do you know you told me about that issue earlier or that point earlier? I think now might be a good time to reveal that to the other room. I think they'll hear it well at this point if you authorize me to share it. So that's how I sort of back and forth between the rooms when I'm mediating. Now, when it comes to the aftermath of mediation, if you like, the assumption is nothing gets shared unless all the parties jointly agree. They jointly agree on what's to be shared and how it's going to be shared. So in the mediation agreement that I help the parties come up with at the end of the session, to capture what they've agreed, their roadmap, if you like, for the future harmonious relationship that everyone wants, I say, okay, my last question to you is, do you want anyone to see this agreement? Or do you want anyone to hear about bits of this agreement? Okay, and this will be in the joint session together when they're both present. And by this time, trust has re-emerged. And they are sort of scratching their heads creatively, thinking, well, we've done a good job here. Why not tell people about it? And who would that be and what should we tell them? But if one party is pro and one is against, I'll say, well, until you both agree, it's got to stay here. The door is shut and locked. But if they both agree, I'll then say, okay, you're happy for them to see your mediation agreement, which is a confidential without prejudice agreement, excuse me. I could send it to HR under cover of a confidentiality blanket for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I could send it back to the HR stakeholder who referred the case to me and say, look, the parties want me to share this with you. Here's their agreement, but it's not to be disseminated any further. Or in performance cases, I would recommend that the agreement that's reached is shared with the senior line management so they can actually understand how and what you've achieved. And that can actually open up minds of senior management and think, well, why don't we do more of this? So it's up to the parties. It's their day, it's their process, and they decide alone what should happen. But if one party doesn't want anything sharing, then it doesn't get shared, and that includes the agreement at the end of it.
Yeah. We're almost out of time, but we have got some questions, and I'm going to apologize now if we don't get to answer the questions while we're on. But one of the questions is, if external mediation isn't quite the right solution for a situation right now, are you able to provide coaching to an internal individual, e.g. HR, to be able to provide a mediation of sorts themselves? I think that's absolutely something that you do and you have done in the past, isn't it? And is really, really something you're keen on.
Yes, the next session we'll be looking at introducing a mediation pilot scheme. And the big message there is you need buy-in from the top. You need everyone behind the idea, what it looks like, how long it's going to run for, what's needed. And those stakeholders that you appoint as, if you like, the
sponsors,
the cheerleaders of the process,
they
need to know that a lot of the principles of coaching, conflict coaching, motivating, good leadership principles, they're common in mediation. They're the same principles. But absolutely, you can use informal mediation. It doesn't need to be an external mediator. But the more it's from within, the harder you've got to sell it as an independent process, because the business and the parties will recognize, well, HR's here for the business, so why would I trust an internal mediation champion? But if you're big enough in terms of resources and people, and if you've got those wise managers and leaders who are good with people, and we all recognize those instantly, don't we? That's the sort of place you need to start to say, well, maybe this internal face can help. They would be good in trying to coach people forward. Certainly we can do that and talk to you
Yeah.
about it.
Oh, well, if you're interested in that, the person who's posted that question, drop Mike a line, and I'm sure that you can have a chat about it. I'm going to have to wrap the session up because we've gone a little bit over, and I'm aware that everybody's like super busy. And so I just wanted to say a very quick thank you to Mike. That was really, really interesting, and I think we probably could have gone on for quite some time. So hopefully everybody enjoyed that, and we'll pick it up at our next session and drive on some further. And I'm interested to hear about the pilot scheme. So thank you very much, everybody, and we will hopefully see you next time. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Can I just say one thing before we sign off completely? Any questions we haven't answered, I'll be happy to answer by email. So I'll come and find you on email and try and give you an answer so that you feel you've got value from the session. But
brilliant.
Mike, as well. Pleasure.
Thanks ever so much, Mike. Cheerio, everybody.
See you next time, everyone.